Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. Authorities are investigating the death of a Waterloo man whose body was found outside a closed auto shop over the weekend. Police identified the deceased as 27-year-old London Topaz Moore. An autopsy to determine the official cause of death is scheduled for Tuesday. Residents found the body near a damaged Jeep Cherokee parked in the gravel lot next to the Corky's Car Care, 453 West Parker Street, around 1 p.m. Saturday when they went to remove items from a vehicle parked at the location. Neighbors said Corky's Car Care has been closed for a while. The property is currently up for sale, according to the signs posted on the building. The investigation is continuing, and anyone with information is asked to call Waterloo Police Detective Division, 319-291-4340, number 3, or Cedar Valley Crime Stoppers, 855-300-TIPS. A Waterloo teen accused of bringing a ghost gun to a high school football game has pleaded guilty to federal charges. Ghost guns are homemade firearms that don't have serial numbers and can't be traced by authorities. Dayton Amaru Shakur Bruce, 19, on Thursday pleaded to one count of being a drug user in possession of ammunition in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids. He remains detained pending sentencing. Authorities allege they found a loaded 9mm home-finished pistol while they were investigating a disturbance at the East versus West match at Memorial Stadium on August 25th. The weapon had three rounds of federal brand 9mm ammunition and six rounds each of Blazer and Winchester 9mm ammo, according to court records. Bruce, a recent high school graduate, had been banned from school activities because of an earlier incident, according to officials. He is also awaiting state charges of carrying weapons on school grounds and interference while armed in connection with the football game. A Grundy Center man has been arrested after police found drugs following a pursuit. Black Hawk County Sheriff's deputies arrested Clarence Ray Hovinga, 34, for felony, eluding, and possession of heroin Thursday. Bond was set at $5,000. According to court records, a deputy noticed a Chevrolet Impala with an expired license plate that had been issued to another vehicle on Ridgeway Avenue in Cedar Falls around 1:30 a.m. Thursday. The deputy attempted to stop the Impala in the area of Sargent and Ranchero Roads, but the vehicle continued south on Sargent, reaching speeds of 115 miles per hour, according to court records. The chase entered Grundy County, and the fleeing vehicle lost control at U and H Avenues and came to rest in the ditch. Hovinga was detained, and deputies found a pouch with heroin and four syringes, records state. A Waterloo native has won a $100,000 Powerball prize. Jason Nablas matched four of five white balls and the Powerball in the April 1st drawing. His initial $50,000 prize was doubled because he added the dollar power play option, which multiplies non-jackpot prize amounts by up to 10 times. Nables purchased his winning ticket at Quickstar, 111 East Donald Street in Waterloo, and claimed his prize Wednesday at the lottery's Cedar Rapids regional office. The winning numbers in the April 1st drawing were 19, 24, 40, 42, 56, and Powerball 23. The power play was 2. Naples' ticket was just one number away from winning that night's $1.03 billion jackpot. The jackpot has continued to grow and now stands at an estimated $1.3 billion for Saturday's drawing. Players in $2 Powerball choose their first five numbers from a pool of 69 and another number, called the Powerball, from a separate pool of 26. The Power Play option is available for an extra $1 per play. A ruse that lasted more than three decades could mean up to three decades in prison for one of two men claiming to be Bill Woods. For years, the two men, identified in court records as California Bill and Wisconsin Bill, battled, contending they were the one true Bill and calling the other an imposter. Both Williams acknowledge the other person's existence and claim the other person is responsible for their identity being stolen, wrote a University of Iowa police detective who investigated the dispute, which involved opening accounts at Waterloo and Dubuque credit unions and a Waverly insurance company. California Bill was homeless and destitute. In contrast, Wisconsin Bill was successful, working remotely, and commanding a $100,000 salary as a systems administrator for the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City, a job that gave him the pinnacle of access to the hospital's computer system. So it was no surprise Wisconsin Bill often came out on top in a series of legal skirmishes that sent California Bill to jail and a mental hospital. Those skirmishes ultimately reversed on April 1st when Wisconsin Bill pleaded to charges of false statement to a credit union and aggravated identity theft in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids. The charges solidified Wisconsin Bill's true identity as Matthew David Kearns, who had used Bill's name and personal information to take out loans and land jobs. Sentencing for Kearns, 58, of Heartland, Wisconsin, will be at a later date. He faces 2 of 32 years behind bars and more than $1.2 million in fines. Not much is known about Kearns before he became Bill. He would later tell investigators he dropped out of school and ran away at age 16 to travel across the country. Kearns had worked with Bill at a hot dog cart in Albuquerque, New Mexico. In 1988, records state, after 1988, there is no record Kearns used his real name, date, or birth, or Social Security number, according to court documents. In Colorado, he obtained a fast food job under California Bill's name in 1990 and opened a bank account using Bill's name and date of birth. The following year, he paid $600 for a used car, passing checks with Bill's name. The checks bounced. Kearns drove to Idaho, where the car broke down. He closed his bank account and left Idaho. Colorado authorities obtained an arrest warrant. In 1994, Kearns was in Salem, Oregon, where he met a woman who would become his wife. They had a son who took Bill's surname, and the couple moved about, with Kearns pursuing computer jobs. She obtained a graduate degree. The son went to college. They paid their taxes and lived a normal life. The couple eventually settled in Wisconsin, where Kearns, still using Bill's name, worked at the corporate headquarters of a department chain store. When he landed the Iowa City position, passing a background check under Bill's name, he would work in Iowa and then make the four-hour drive back to Wisconsin on the weekends. The pandemic solidified his ability to work remotely from home the majority of the time. At some point, the real Bill, living in California, discovered Kearns was using his identity, living under his name and using his information to take out credit cards, automobile, and personal loans. Loans investigators said totaled more than $200,000 over the years. The person who had spent $600 on a broken-down car was now buying $20,000 Jeep Cherokees. On August 20th, 2019, California Bill, the real Bill, walked into the Los Angeles branch of a bank where Kieran's had an account in Bill's name. Bearing his real Social Security card and state-issued ID, California Bill told the assistant manager someone was using his identity to take out loans, and while he was there, he asked to close out the bank account, removing all the money Wisconsin Bill had deposited. The amount involved wasn't immediately clear, but it was significant enough to prompt bank workers to ask a series of questions to verify he was the one who opened the account. They were questions that California Bill couldn't answer. The bank manager called the phone number associated with the account and talked to Wisconsin Bill, who correctly answered the security question and said California Bill was an imposter. Kieran's then faxed copies of his Wisconsin driver's license in Bill's name and a copy of Bill's birth certificate and Social Security card to Los Angeles police to establish his identity. California Bill was arrested and charged under Kieran's name. Prosecutors sought a competency exam because he kept insisting he was the real Bill, and he was ordered to a mental hospital and prescribed psychotropic medication, court records state. California Bill ended up pleading no contest, not admitting guilt, but acknowledging he would likely be convicted at trial to identity theft as part of a plea deal. In all, he spent 428 days in jail and 147 days in a mental hospital. As part of the sentence, the judge ordered California Bill not to use Bill's name and only use Kieran's name. California Bill apparently didn't follow the order and, in August 2021, contacted Wisconsin authorities to complain that Kieran's was using his identity and took up the matter with credit reporting agencies. Kieran's stuck with his story that he was the real Bill and filed his own complaint with Wisconsin police. Meanwhile, California Bill went to University of Iowa hospitals and clinics where Kieran's worked. The matter was passed to a University of Iowa police detective who talked with Kieran's, who insisted California Bill was crazy and needed help and should be locked up. The detective then took an extra step in obtaining a DNA sample from Bill's father in Kentucky, who went by Billy, to settle the matter once and for all. The DNA results came back on June 20th, 2023, proving California Bill was the true Bill. An FBI fingerprint check the following month confirmed Wisconsin Bill was the real Matthew Kearns, according to court records. Confronted with the evidence, Kearns told the university detective, "My life is over and everything is gone." Court records state. He went on to admit to using Bill's identity in every aspect of his life, including obtaining a copy of Bill's birth certificate in 2012, according to court records. In August 2023, Bremer County authorities charged Kearns with submitting a false insurance application and forgery in state court for a policy he took out from CMFG Life of Waverly using Bill's identity in 2019. Johnson County authorities filed similar charges for using Bill's birth certificate to get the hospital job and for using a license with Bill's name when he got a traffic ticket. tens of thousands of Iowans are set to lose a monthly stipend for internet access at the end of April if Congress does not approve more funding, putting their connection to vital services like health care and work opportunities at risk. The Affordable Connectivity Program, created in the American Rescue Plan Act in 2021, provides $30 a month for low-income Americans to help pay their internet bill, and $75 in tribal regions. But that money will run out at the end of April, and Congress has not approved a proposal to replace the funding. More than 124,000 Iowa households are receiving the monthly stipend to help pay for their internet access, according to data from the White House. The program has provided more than $68 million to those households over the last 2 years. While the $1.2 trillion government funding package passed by federal lawmakers in March did not include extra funding for the program, a bipartisan group of lawmakers has introduced legislation to keep it funded through the end of the year. The bill, which would devote $7 billion to the program, has 221 co-sponsors in the U.S. House and 3 sponsors in the Senate. But experts are skeptical that it will have the support to become law. None of Iowa's members of Congress, who are all Republicans, have signed on to the proposal. President Joe Biden's administration is pushing for more funding for the program, calling it a vital lifeline for vulnerable families and a key effort to narrow the digital divide. In a press call with reporters this week, Stephen Benjamin, a senior advisor to Biden, called on House Republicans to fund the program before it runs out in April. The program was open to families with an income of less than 200% of the federal poverty line, or around $62,400 for a family of four. It stopped accepting applicants in February, and April will be the last month of funding. Enrollees may receive a partial stipend in May, but without a congressional fix, the benefit will end this spring. The impact of the program shuttering for Iowa families will be significant, said Community Action Broadband Network co-founder Curtis Dean. The organization works on digital equity in Iowa and other states, working with community providers to improve internet access. Once the funding runs out, the tens of thousands of Iowans enrolled in the program would need to switch to a cheaper plan, cut spending on other necessities, or end their internet access entirely, Dean said. It's unclear how many people enrolled in the program will be unable to afford any home internet connection, Dean said, but he said he thinks there will be Iowans who lose their service. If there are other programs enrolled Iowans can access to help fill in the gaps, but none are as generous as the ACP. The Federal Communications Commission has a lifeline program that provides families with an income of less than 135% of the poverty line with a $9.25 a month stipend for either a phone or internet bill if their provider participates in the program. The large investment in broadband access in the last few years, including the ACP, was partially motivated by the pandemic, pushing important daily necessities online. Students attending school virtually sometimes resorted to school and restaurant parking lots to complete schoolwork, and Dean said some families will likely have to return to that. One rural internet provider is optimistic that all its customers will be able to keep access after the federal benefit ends. Muscatine Power and Water, a nonprofit offering fiber internet in Muscatine and Fruitland, has about 200 customers that are enrolled in the program, said Erica Cox, a director of customer and technology experience. Most of those customers were already receiving service through the utility before the program began, but some customers were able to receive internet service for the first time because of the stipend, Cox said. Cox also said the pandemic elevated the need for a reliable internet connection, and the program has helped Muscatine community members participate in the digital economy. Muscatine Power and Water has informed enrolled customers of the upcoming end of the program, and Cox said she expects those customers will be able to keep access and switch to a more affordable plan if needed. Still, she said, she is hopeful that Congress will be able to pass more funding for the program. For almost a decade, RodCon has been bringing people together. The annual comic book science fiction and fantasy gathering marked its 9th year at the University of Northern Iowa's Rod Library on Saturday. Among the costume contests and vendor tables hawking everything superhero, Dungeons and Dragons, Pokemon, and anime was a booth seeking recruits for the 501st Legion, an army of Star Wars fans who cosplay the Galactic Empire. All bad guys. We have movie-accurate costumes, and we go around and spread the joy and love of Star Wars, said Matt McSweeney of Cedar Falls, who was dressed as an Imperial officer standing next to Darth Vader and two stormtroopers. McSweeney is with the Korriban Squad, the 501st's Iowa chapter, which has a strength of about 50 people. Membership is free. He said the group's mission includes making appearances like children's hospitals, charity walks, and Star Wars nights at the Blackhawks hockey game. Membership is open to anyone age 18 and over, and the group adheres to authenticity in the costumes. Garb can be purchased or handmade. There is the Galactic Academy for those under age 18, which doesn't have the strict uniform policy. The 501st's Korriban Squad can be reached at facebook.com, the Korriban Squad. Also swinging in for a RodCon appearance were Spider-Man and Deadpool, members of Crush, Cedar Rapids Ultimate Superheroes, who were collecting donations for the Cedar Bend Humane Society. Like the Stormtrooper organization, Crush is known for appearing at charity events like the Night to Shine for Children with Disabilities. We do a lot with autism and special needs. We show up as their superheroes. A lot of them love seeing their superheroes in real life, said Micah Eldridge, dressed as Marvel's Spider-Gwen. Crush has been around for about 9 years and currently has 7 members. It is always taking new members, and the group can be reached through its Facebook page, facebook.com Cedar Rapids Ultimate Superheroes. For cosplayers looking for a little bit more activity, there is Belagarth, a medieval combat society. Dressed as Dark Age warriors and elves and other fantasy characters, Belagarth players battle each other with swords and other weapons. It's foam swords and shields, so no one gets hurt, said Alex Olson of Des Moines. It is full contact. You can full on hit people, said Nick Camp of Cedar Falls, president of the local chapter. He then turned to Olson with his weapon. I'm going to hit you, by the way, Camp said. There was a loud smacking noise. The local chapter holds practice 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesdays and 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturdays outside Lothar Hall on the UNI campus. Participants must be 18 years or older or aged 16 or 17 with parental permission. The national group hosts events including an annual week-long camping gathering in Indiana called Oktoberfest. There's a reason organizers of the 14th Hops event won't be sharing which downtown establishments will have particular samples on Thursday from 15 Iowa breweries and 2 cideries. The idea is to try different ones, not just taste what you know, said Nick Newgard, owner of Second State Brewing Company. People can buy tickets online at communitymainstreet.ticketspice.com and at the Community Main Street office, 310 East 4th Street, or they can be purchased the day of the event between 5:30 and 6:30 at River Place Plaza, 100 East 2nd Street, or George's Local, 108 East 4th Street. After getting the wristband, IDs checked, registration verified, and grabbing a vintage hops glass and coaster, people can skip around in any order until 9 p.m. to any one of the 16 bars and restaurants with one or two of the Iowa Brewery's product. The event also is a fundraiser for the dozens of hanging baskets and pots of wave petunias and other flowers in the downtown district spring through fall. The new participants are Jefferson County Cider, Paha Cider, and No Coast Brewery, he said. The returners are Exile, Big Grove, Bit, House Divided, Tellurian Brewery, Bremer, Lake Time, Back Pocket, Toppling Goliath, Franklin Street, Mardo, Reunion, Second State, and Single Speed Brewing. The locations are Second State and Single Speed, as well as Horny Toad, Wilbo, Double Tap, Brass Tap, Landmark, Pump House, Urban Pie, The Other Place, Roxy, Cypress Lounge, George's Local, Harry's Five and Dime, Whiskey Road, and Blue Room. While people may not be given the identities of the one or more craft beer or cider samples being handed out on the streets, they will have a map known as the Hop Stop Card to help show them where to go. People may be asking, where is Cypress Lounge, said Newgard, which is another place to enjoy refreshments in the Northeast Corridor with Second State and Urban Pie. We make it a quick hitter there, and then everyone else is on Main Street, Newgard said, later adding, to pay attention to the map, because you want to hit them all. People have the time to enjoy hops, given that the event lasts 3 hours. You can choose your adventure. The brewer is there. You can taste and ask questions and buy more if you want, said Kim Baer, executive director at Community Main Street. Another benefit to the event is the relationships formed between brewery and downtown establishments. Newgard emphasized that's a real benefit for those without a distributor or wanting another avenue to market other than the beer fests in the bigger cities. They get to know local bars and restaurants, what may turn into future business partnerships if there is a boom in response. It's great to meet the owners and reps and put a face to the brew, said James Burtis, co-owner of Brass Tap, especially when it's the brewers themselves, because it's a chance to talk shop about what they do. Hops began in 2008 as Hops Around the World and eventually became known as just Hops, as a focus was placed on Iowa breweries. The after-event party was eliminated due to a lack of attendance. It brings out a demographic different than we literally see at any event, said Baer, with a much greater mixing of age groups, for example, and it's a fun way to kick off our events season, said Tessendorf. Among the events scheduled are Restaurant Week, April 1929, and the first Girls' Night Out of the Year, 5 to 8 p.m. May 2nd. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Susan Ray Vogel, 74, of Waterloo, passed away Thursday, April 4th, at Mercy One Medical Center in Waterloo. She was born March 22, 1950, and affectionately called Sue by those who were lucky enough to love her, and Moni by her adoring grandchildren. Susan married John W. Vogel on June 17, 1972, at Grace Evan Lutheran Evangelical Church in Waterloo. After graduating from West High and attending Gates Business College, she devoted many years to working as a resident treatment worker for the Mental Health Institute, MHI, in Independence. She was a proud AFS-CME union member and championed workers' rights. She was passionate about local politics and knocked on hundreds of doors to support candidates she believed in. The family will host a celebration of life on Saturday, April 13th at 11 a.m. at Grace Lutheran Evangelical Church in Waterloo. Interment will take place at Memorial Park Cemetery in Waterloo. Memorial contributions may be made to Grace Lutheran Evangelical Church. Anne Margaret Lamick died on April 5th at Wellspring Living Facility. She was born at home in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on August 10, 1924, 1 minute after her twin sister, Irene. Anne graduated from West Catholic Girls High School in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in 1943. She met her future husband, Oscar K. Lane Jr., M.D., when she was 16 and he was 18. He was playing piano in a band at a house party in West Philly, and Anne and her twin sister were dancing outside. Oscar came outside during the band break, and they met. Years later, they married after Oscar was put through medical school by the Army Air Corps. He became a physician at 24 years old, and she became a military spouse, traveling with him from base hospital to base hospital in the U.S. Anne was proud that she worked at Bell Telephone Company in Philadelphia before she married. She worked countless charity volunteer hours in Waterloo and was a member of the Sierra Club and the Waterloo Woman's Club. Anne conquered many debilitating diseases during her life, beating scarlet fever as a child, tuberculosis, and 5 bouts with cancer. Her faith and determination have been an inspiration to all who know her. Many in the family nicknamed her the Iron Maiden for her strength and courage during her lifetime. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, April 12th at St. Edward Church in Waterloo, with interment at the family gravesite in Mount Olivet Catholic Cemetery in Waterloo. There will be public visitation for an hour before services at the church. A luncheon at the church dining area will be held for attendees immediately after the graveside service. We would like memorials to go to the Anne and Dr. Oscar Lanick Scholarship Fund at the Allen Hospital School of Nursing in Waterloo. William Bill Earl Kukrol, 73, of Waverly, died Sunday, March 31st at his home. Bill was born in Cresco, Iowa on February 15, 1951. The family made their way to the Waverly area, where Bill attended school from third grade up to graduation from Waverly Shell Rock High School in 1969. He met Nancy Haas while she was attending Wartburg in Waverly, and they were married June 8, 1974 at Trinity Lutheran Church in Oak Lawn, Illinois. Bill and Nancy made their home on an acreage north of Waverly, where they have spent the last 47 years. Bill worked various jobs throughout his life, but spent the majority of his working years welding until retirement. Retirement came with a new title of truck driver for his son-in-law, Troy. Bill has been cremated. Visitation will be held on Friday, April 12th at the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly, where family will greet friends from 4 to 7 p.m. Memorial service will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, April 13th at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Waverly. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to St. Paul Lutheran School or Cedar Valley Hospice. Monica, or Mo, Joyce Crawford, 49, of Waterloo, passed away April 2nd at Unity Point Allen Hospital in Waterloo, surrounded by her family. A viewing will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday, April 12th at Adams Celebration of Life in Owosso. A celebration of life will be from 2 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, April 13th at Prairie Bridges, the Back 40, in Ackley. Patsy B. Potter, 94, of Waterloo, passed away Friday, April 5th at Pinnacle Specialty Care in Cedar Falls. She was born October 17th, 1929, in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. She married Francis Potter September 10th, 1949, in Waterloo. He preceded her in death in 2013. She graduated from East High School in 1947 and received her LPN degree. She worked a few years in nursing and various jobs at Rath Packing Company and Covenant Medical Center. Her favorite job was having a preschool in her home. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Thursday, April 11th at Open Bible Church with burial in Garden of Memories Cemetery. Public visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 10th at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on West Ridgeway and also for an hour before services at the church. Memorials may be directed to the family. Mary Lou Doms, 84, of Trier, passed away Wednesday, April 3rd at Sunrise Hill Care Center in Trier. A celebration of life gathering will be held at a future date. Mary Lou was born on July 29th, 1939, in Nevada. She graduated from Maxwell High School and Iowa State Teachers College, UNI. On August 9th, 1959, she was united in marriage to Richard Doms in Maxwell. Mary Lou taught fifth grade at the North Tama School District and then raised her family and took care of their home when the kids came along. Mary Lou was a member of the Trier United Methodist Church, a charter member of the Trier Museum, and a big supporter of the Trier Library. Memorials may be directed to the Tama County Humane Society or the Trier Library. Michael Luck, 75, of New Hartford, died on Friday, April 5th, at the Rehabilitation Center of Allison in Allison. Family-conducted memorial services will be held on Friday, April 12th, at 11 a.m. at the First Baptist Church in New Hartford. And now on to sports. The Columbus Catholic girls tennis team took second at its annual Top Gun tournament. The Sailors, the defending back-to-back Class 1A team state champions, scored 25 points as a team to earn second. Clinton took first with a team score of 32 points. Decorah and Ottumwa took third and fourth, respectively. According to head coach David Will, the Sailors had a good day using the tournament for their betterment. Will added that the Sailors' athleticism and competitiveness can make up for the relative lack of experience compared to last season's senior-laden squad. Leading the way for Columbus on Saturday was number one singles champ Kate Holton. Holton stepped up to the top spot in the Sailors lineup this season after spending her freshman season as the number four in Columbus's lineup. Holton rolled to her first two wins of the afternoon, defeating the number one players from Ottumwa and Decorah. Holton edged out Clinton's Cece Han 7-6 to earn the top spot at the tournament. Following the tournament, the sophomore said she continues to work on the development of her mental game. Holton marked Columbus's lone singles champ, though senior Rachel Holland tied for first in number two singles, but lost on a total games one tiebreaker to Clinton's Maddie Rowden. The Sailors also took home one doubles title as the duo of junior Sawyer Schaefer and senior Isabella Nolan claimed the number two doubles crown. Noland and Schaefer opened the doubles round robin with a narrow 7-6 victory over the Decorah duo of Clara Short and Caitlin Bjork, winning the final game of the match to start 1-0. The duo followed up the win with an 8-5 victory over Clinton's Elizabeth Grinnell and Katie Atkinson before finishing undefeated with a 9-4 win over Ottumwa's Jordan Lee and Emerson Keith. Both agreed that bringing the right mindset helped to make the difference on Saturday, while the result can be a boon to their morale as a 1-2 punch ahead of a tough tournament in Johnston next Friday. Injury-riddled Northern Iowa tennis team dropped a pair of matches against Illinois, Chicago, and Valparaiso over the weekend. The Panthers fell to UIC 7-0 on Saturday and 6-1 to Valparaiso on Sunday. Adriana Burke picked up the lone win for the Panthers at the number one singles spot, beating Valpo's Moira Silva 3-6, 6-4, and 10-4. Coach Chris Sagers did not have an update on the status of UNI's number 3, Lorena Cardoza, and number 4, Kim Sizek, who remain out. Riding a 3-game losing streak, the Waterloo Blackhawks erupted for a pair of wins over the weekend, beating the Omaha Lancers 7-1 on Friday and the Cedar Rapids Rough Riders 8-1 on Saturday. On Friday, Waterloo scored 4 goals in the opening frame to put the game out of reach. Reed Morick, Gavin Lindberg, John Mustard, and Griffin Erdman tallied the Hawks' quartet of goals. Gavin Thorson scored the lone second-period goal before Mustard and Teddy Townsend wrapped up the win with third-period markers. On Saturday, Waterloo managed bookend periods of 3 goals to sandwich a 2-goal second period. Erdman, Morick, and Tyler Miller scored in the opening frame, while Miles Hillman and Thorson extended the lead to 5-0 in the second period. Hillman and Erdman scored their second goals of the game in the third period, while Errol Batula added his 4th goal of the season. Kelvin Vacant backstopped both wins, making 42 saves on 44 shots. With the wins, the Hawks improved to 35-24-0-1 on the season, 72 points, as the race for second place in the Western Conference intensified. Waterloo trails Sioux City, who is 33-21-6-0, for second by 1 point, with 2 games remaining in the regular season. The Northern Iowa softball team, 18-13 overall and 6-3 in MVC, gets its first opportunity to see in-state rival Drake in the 2024 season on Tuesday. According to UNI head coach Ryan Jacobs, the Panthers are in for a big challenge as the Bulldogs feature a new head coach in Lindsey Deal. First pitch is slated for 5 p.m. in Des Moines on Tuesday, with broadcast coverage provided by ESPN+. Chilly darkness fell across North America on Monday as a total solar eclipse raced across the continent. thrilling those lucky enough to behold the spectacle through clear skies. In the Cedar Valley, the clouds cooperated, and a partial eclipse covered about 84% of the sun's surface at 2:01 p.m. on Monday. It left onlookers totally enthralled. A few dozen people gathered in a parking lot at George Wythe State Park, where local amateur astronomers set up their gear to observe the moon's voyage across the sun. "That's Bob's telescope. The other one used to be my telescope, but I gave it to Jim," said Scott Williams. "This is a 6-inch refractor. That's a 9-inch refractor." Residents took turns gazing into Bob Hackett and Jim Bailey's two high-power telescopes that were powered by motors to track the movement and fitted with opaque filters to dampen the otherwise blinding light. Across the parking lot, Chad Huber and his mother, Sue, of Cedar Falls, occasionally glanced up at the celestial dance using cardboard and foil glasses available at the watch party. "I didn't think we would be able to see it at all because it was so cloudy," said Sue, who traveled to Missouri to be in the path of totality in 2017 when the last total eclipse hovered over North America. Chad Huber, who now lives in New Orleans, Louisiana, had come up to Iowa to visit his mother, and the two decided to take in the spectacle. The Grout Museum District offered the chance to watch NASA's live stream of the eclipse in the Norris Corson Family Planetarium from noon to 3 p.m. The show sold out, and overflow guests were able to view it from the district's Sullivan Brothers Iowa Veterans Museum Theater. 50 people took advantage of the opportunity. Overseeing the event was Benjamin Miller, the Grout's education director. "It's been an awesome experience," he said. "I've been so excited for this. It's like Christmas to me. I woke up early and I've been geeking out all day. It's finally happening." Sarah Reese and Isla McDeed, 10, made the trip from Ames to view the eclipse from the Grout. Isla was glad to have the chance to see the eclipse. "We drove to Missouri in 2017 and watched from the middle of a cornfield," Reese said. "It was a great memory." Miller said around 2 p.m. at the local park of the peak of the eclipse, about 30 people gathered in the Grout parking lot and atrium to view it. 8th grade Central Middle School students noticed the sky getting slightly darker shortly before 2 p.m., while obtaining glasses and instruction in the hallway from science teacher Matt Stein. They sprinkled out onto the lawn and spread out across a parking lot for about half an hour to witness the solar display. "This is wild," Quentin Ruffins, 13, pointed out, "because the event only happens every so many years. It's a rare interaction." Ruffins was joined by more than 150 of his classmates, talking, taking photos with their phones, looking up at the thin crescent of the sun, and asking questions about what they were seeing. Several, including Ruffins, compared what they were seeing with what they'd read and watched on social media platforms like TikTok. Among the questions she heard from her classmates were about what would happen to their phones while taking a photo. "Would it overheat and explode?" she recalled classmates asking. She said Stein debunked the myth. Stein had been teaching mini lessons to students on Monday, describing types of eclipses and what to expect. The class was there at the height of the eclipse as the sun was mostly covered and then began to reappear. "I talked about what their pets are probably going through at home right now," he said, also noting how it puts distance into perspective, because an eclipse from another planet would bring different results. The science teacher described the time as an educational break they have the luxury of taking as students. He was pleased to see their enthusiasm bubbling over. The hype was real, as some students and adults may have expected a full eclipse. "I thought it would be bigger," said Obi Ebot, 15, to which another classmate said she expected it to be darker. The 6th and 7th grade classes got a taste of the eclipse in separate half-hour blocks before it reached its peak. At least one business in Cedar Falls was commemorating the event in a special way. Sarah's Espresso Cafe, 419 Main Street, had a special solar eclipse energy brew, a monster energy drink with notes of raspberry, strawberry, dark rum, and white mocha added to it. "It's to celebrate," said owner Sarah Rolson, who concocted the special drink on a whim with Tarina Galaxy syrup. On the front of the bottle was a pink and light blue cyclone. "It tastes like a Tootsie Roll," she noted. "The first-time brew will be available all week or until it's sold out." Her staff had been talking with people that morning about the expected spectacle. Conversation topics hit on the special glasses and the cloudy start to the day. Linda and Jeff Alexandres found their eclipse glasses from 7 years ago and watched the eclipse on Monday while working in their backyard and flower bed in Waterloo. They drove for hours to Missouri to see the 2017 eclipse, only to have clouds obstruct the view. Linda Alexandres said they were interested in getting another look because it's a natural phenomenon that doesn't happen all that often. Tim Bowler of Cedar Falls also drove to Missouri to see the eclipse in 2017 and was planning again to take in the moment. "It was pretty dramatic," said Bowler, though he wasn't expecting the same eerie experience in the Cedar Valley in 2024. "You could take anyone outside and they would freak out," he said about the event in 2017. "The temperature dropped, the cows on each side of the road herded together like they knew it was coming and were getting ready to go to sleep. Then it passed and they went back to what they were doing." The Northeast Iowa Food Bank has awarded its 2024 pantry development grants. 12 different partner agencies were awarded a total of $28,000 to improve the inner workings of their pantries for Northeast Iowans experiencing food insecurity. Last year, the food bank awarded a total of $25,000 to improve or expand the services of our partner agency locations. Partner agencies can use funds to purchase food storage, computers for service insights participation, and marketing for community awareness, including bilingual signage. Service Insights, a Feeding America initiative, electronically collects and shares data from agencies and food banks nationwide to improve services for specific populations like children and seniors. "We are so thankful to be able to support our partner agencies and the growing needs of their community for a second year in a row. They play an incredibly important part in fulfilling our vision of a community in which hunger is alleviated. This grant will directly impact communities by improving and expanding the great work already happening in Northeast Iowa," said Shannon Bass, Director of Programs at the Northeast Iowa Food Bank. Winning partners include Northeast Iowa Community Action Corporation in Bremer County, Family Resource Center of Guttenberg, Independence Area Food Pantry, Greater Area Food Pantry in Kelmer, Postville Community Support, Open Hands Food Pantry in West Union, Operation Threshold of Grundy Center, South Tama County Food Pantry, Malcolm Food Pantry, Mid-Iowa Community Action in Grinnell, the Food Nook of Waterloo, and the Northeast Iowa Community Action Corporation of Howard County in Cresco. NEIFB is committed to strengthening partnerships with organizations that share the goal of ensuring Northeast Iowans who are food insecure have access to every meal every day. NEIFB supports partner agencies by investing time, talent, and resources to strengthen their ability to serve communities across NEIFB's 16-county service area. Each community, organization, and neighbor are unique, and NEIFB strives to meet their distinct needs. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date.
Since the dawn of humankind, people have used caves to explore, hold religious ceremonies, create art, or avoid the dangers of weather and predators. Partly because of that, they continue to fascinate scientists today. To create a cave, Mother Nature needs three things: water, rock that can be dissolved by it, and lots of time. Rainwater, as it falls through the atmosphere, picks up carbon from CO2 to become a weak carbonic acid. By the time it hits Earth, it's about as acidic as coffee. As it percolates through the soil, it picks up more carbon from decaying plants, becoming a slightly stronger acid. If the rock below the soil is limestone, gypsum, or dolomite, the water can dissolve along tiny cracks. Over many thousands of years, the cracks become channels, then tunnels, and could eventually become caverns. Water might also mix with hydrogen sulfide gas seeping up from natural oil and gas deposits to form sulfuric acid, which can also dissolve the rock. Protected from daily and seasonal changes on the surface, caves can maintain a stable temperature and humidity. In these delicate environments, the remains of ancient animals and humans, which could have quickly decayed on the surface, have been preserved for millennia. Deeper, more isolated caves have preserved bacteria and microbes undisturbed for millions of years. These qualities make caves important sites for researchers, natural time capsules. There's probably an amazing cave near you, so take a trip and get to know your Earth. I'm Scott Tinker, dissolving mysteries on Earth Date.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.